Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Stephen Oliver, CEO of the National Association of Professional Martial Artists, and I am delighted to have Inner Circle member Jeff Cielo here on the line with me. Jeff, welcome to our conversation today.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, Jeff, let's start by giving everybody just some sense of maybe first your martial arts background and second your career to date and how you ended up running martial arts schools.
Absolutely. It's kind of a funny story. I started, you know, just like anybody else. I was really young when I got my first intro into the martial arts, and then I did a little bit more when I was in high school and a little bit more when I was in college. When I went into the Navy after the U.S. Naval Academy, I went ahead and trained seriously then at that point. As I got out of the Navy, I went to Maryland where my instructor was at, and he asked me at that point if I wanted to go ahead and start teaching. I, of course, had plans to open a business at one point or another, but at that point, I'd said, sure, I'll go ahead and start teaching for you. And then about 6 months after that, he had said, do you want to own? And that really piqued my interest because it was a business, and he showed me the business side of it. So I was very, very intrigued with it, and I ended up owning a school. 1993 is when I owned the location down here in Virginia Beach.
Okay, so you're you know, we didn't tell people that, but you're in Virginia Beach now. You went to Annapolis. What year did you go to Annapolis?
Yes, I graduated from the U.S. Naval Academy in 1989. I graduated with a computer science degree, and went into the Navy shortly thereafter. After some time in the Navy, I decided that this was not going to be my career, per se, and I knew that I was going to go into business. So at that point, I went ahead and put my papers in to get out at the time allotted and started on my career.
Yeah, fabulous. So did you originally own a school in Maryland, or did you open originally in Virginia Beach?
Oh, actually what happened was I went to study at the main location in Clinton, Maryland, and that's where I was asked to go ahead and start teaching. What ended up happening is we were going to open a location in the Rockville area, and we had gone and looked in several different places, and it just wasn't happening as far as the lease was concerned. And so my instructor at the time had said, well, do you want to go ahead and take a look at the place that you had trained down in Virginia Beach? And I said, sure, you know, because I wanted to do this. We took a look at the numbers and we said, okay, well, let's go ahead and do it. And so I've been here ever since.
Excellent. In Clinton, who are you training with?
I was training under Grandmaster Yung Sung Lee.
Okay.
He owns a chain of studios up in the Clinton and Northern Virginia area.
Interesting. You probably haven't heard the story before, but just before I moved to Washington, moved from Washington D.C. to Denver, I was working with Ned Muffley, who was the person who started that school in Clinton, Maryland.
Oh,
and
wow!
So my the interesting tie here. I didn't realize it, but Ned had I'll say it as nice as I can, but he'd been kind of kicked out of the Jin Ri Institute. Through very little fault of his own, in my opinion. And I had just graduated from Georgetown and went to work with Ned under the stipulation that, one, I was going to move to Denver and open a chain of martial arts schools, and I had planned to go to work for a chain of fitness centers, work with Neil Ehrlich, but it was a chance to work with a startup. And so Ned's understanding was I was only going to be there for maybe 6 months. And my stipulation was I got access to all the books and got a chance to see what everything cost for the startup and so forth. And so Ned and a partner opened the school. I had access to all the books. I saw everything that was going on. And by the way, it was, on their part, an abysmal failure. And when I moved to Washington, D.C., Yung Sung Lee was my replacement. So Ned had hired Young Sung Lee, and I spent about a month training him.
Oh, wow.
To take over that location. And then he had worked went to work for Ned Muffley in Clinton. If people aren't familiar with that area, Clinton is right by Andrews Air Force Base. So when you hear of the president flying in and out of the country, I was commuting from Alexandria. I lived right across the street from the Pentagon. So when the plane hit the Pentagon, it was a straight shot from my balcony to that
wow.
side of the Pentagon. It was right there by the heliport. But interesting. I never knew we had that common connection way back
yes, sir.
In the day. But anyway, so you started in Hapkido, and then ended up in Virginia Beach.
Yes, about a year afterwards, I then went under Grandmaster Kim out of Maryland under straight Taekwondo. And
yep.
then I
yep.
continued teaching a blend of Hapkido and Taekwondo.
Okay, fantastic. But now, you know, moving forward, so the school has been there. What is that now? You've been there a little under
almost
20 years.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Geez.
We've moved around a couple of
30 years ago from Clinton, Maryland.
Wow.
I moved
yes,
out here. I left there in December or it must have been March of 83. And so I
wow.
was there with Ned from August 82 to March of 83 and probably had spent March of 83 training Young Sung Lee, who,
wow.
who, by the way, was young, wet behind the ears, and a tad arrogant.
Yes, so. I don't know if any of that's changed. But that aside, what ended up happening is I actually joined NAPMA back in 94 when we separated from the other organization. We found the information that NAPMA was putting out very informative. However, there wasn't a driving force behind it. And what I mean by that is it was information. So you had to be the self-starter. You had to be the person to get in there and say, okay, well, what can I use and what is good and what is bad. There wasn't any direction as far as coaching, or there wasn't any direction as far as help, as far as somebody saying, okay, let me hold you accountable to this. And what I found is I know the listeners don't know this, but I used to own two locations, and we had opened the second location about 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago. And then after a series of events, I had to downsized to one location due to a divorce. And I know there's plenty of people out there that have had some type of situation happen to them where they've had a catastrophic thing happen to them. But what I've found is when we had started, even before the school separated, that we were accelerating the rate of growth at an exponential rate because we were starting to listen to the ideas that were given during each one of these conferences is one. And second, we were being held accountable. We had coaching sessions where we had to say, okay, this is what's going on with the school right now, and this is what we need to do in order to make it better. And then we had suggestions
yeah.
directly from you that were proven, that actually worked.
Yeah, and so, you know, to summarize, and, you know, I guess I already always knew this, but we did couple years ago, or maybe a year ago now, a tour through the United States between Toby and I. We probably ended up each talking to 200, 250 school owners, many of whom were current or former NAPMA members. But we were finding a huge discrepancy between people who had gotten a lot of good information and those who were really thriving. And my frame of reference was in both owning and operating my own schools, coaching franchisees, and then doing coaching with individual owner operators. And, you know, my result was having a $17,000 a month school end up at 35 in 6 months and 50 in a year. And we were finding a lot of people who might have 100 DVDs stacked up on their desk but really hadn't done much with.
That's absolutely correct.
And the difference, it seems, is just like martial arts. I mean, there are people who sell get a DVD of the Month Club to learn self-defense, and we all know they don't end up teaching anybody anything. versus you're in a classroom environment, plus you have a concerned and focused and capable teacher, mentor, makes all the difference in the world.
That makes all the difference in the world, complete difference in the world. We went from understanding some concepts on a DVD to actually being able to implement them and having a direction. Because if we were lost, I mean, I could easily call Toby, I could call and leave a message and try to go on the forums and connect with the people that were there. In fact, I was put in such a good position because I'm being put with people that are already successful chain owners where I can ask them any question. And they don't look down at me at all. I mean, they look at me like just another owner that's been looking to improve themselves.
Yeah, we've got a heck of a good group of people working together.
What I've noticed is that you have people there that have varied backgrounds as far as martial arts, but when it comes down to business, they are one sharp group. You've got people that have made their business with the adult market. You've got people that have made their business with the kid market. You have even somebody there that made their business with the after-school program. And I was just amazed at how willing they are to share all the information. In fact, one of the ideas that I got from just one gentleman, it was the gentleman that does the after-school, is
Paul Miller.
He just,
Zach.
Yes, Paul Miller. Paul Miller, and such a personable guy, and his son is great. The one concept that I got that was absolutely astonishing was when he did the Living Social, because you get a lot of leads off of that,
mm-hmm.
is how to introduce them into the martial arts by giving them an actual private first. And you know, we say that, and typically what we would do is we would put them into a regular intro class. But now we're actually scheduling them throughout the day, and I understand that this is a basic concept for some people, but for us it was a concept that now we can schedule intros anytime.
Mm-hmm.
And that one concept has driven our numbers up, and I think it's great to network with these type of people.
Oh, absolutely. And something that I think that we're talking about that group is we have, we've got $1 million a year school teaching predominantly adult men Muay Thai to $1 million plus school teaching predominantly adult men Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to several multi-school and huge single school. I think of Chris Bro in New York, who's doing about 80,000 a month teaching predominantly kids and families. I mean, we've got everything from predominantly cardio, predominantly transport after school care, to character development for kids and families, and Taekwondo, Hapkido background like yourself. So it brings tremendous synergy into the group, whether it's MMA schools or kids schools, or I talked earlier today with Eric Sabarge, who's predominantly 45 years old and up, adults doing predominantly Tai Chi. And
yeah.
Of course, as you know, I mean, yeah, he's, I think, 750 or 800,000 this year, and he's super sharp. It's just incredible to be with this group of people. But anyway, back to your operation, Jeff. See, so you've been in Virginia Beach for almost 20 years, but really have been on a combination of a little bit of trauma, but then a heavy growth curve.
Yes, sir.
18, 24 months. So let's start with two or three lessons that you picked up. Perhaps between the marketing boot camp and the inner circle meetings, what are two or three things that you have found that maybe you weren't doing before that you've made a dramatic change in the last year?
Well, one of the things in the boot camp especially was it was something you said, and it was just one of those things like a light bulb moment. It was like you said, if you just did more of the things that you were supposed to do, you get more leads and you get more enrollments. And I thought to myself, that is such an easy concept that it's not something that I would think of. And I thought about it for a little bit. And then when they went through all the different things that we could do as far as marketing, I had seen at least 80% of them, but never put it together into a plan. When you had us do that drill where we had to work with other school owners to come up with plans within a certain budget, oh my goodness, that lit a fire under me and it said, okay, well, here's something concrete. Here's something that I can take away and I can implement as soon as I get back into my school. That was one awesome, awesome concept. The second awesome concept that I received from the marketing boot camp was the immense knowledge that Toby has regarding the internet and how the internet works and how we can make that work for us using the squeeze pages and all that stuff that he was going over. It was just amazing.
Yeah. Well, there we got fairly technical, and then we're scheduling a bunch of webinars and follow-ups from there to even drill deeper in the weeds. But there's so much of that I think people just don't think about. And the mission, of course, is to generate new students, not to have a pretty website. And
that's correct.
The two are pretty distinct opposites sometimes. Well, good. In your current school, now that the kind of dust has settled from the divorce and one thing or another, tell us about you've had a really nice run now on your and obviously you've been running a very solid school for many years now. So what are two or three of the lessons that you would share with everybody from the year?
Well, the first lesson that I would share is to do what you're saying. Is if you make a recommendation, do it and do it right away. Whether you believe that it's going to work or you don't believe it's going to work, just do what you say. Because when you say something, it's something that's proven already, and it's something that's going to work. And if you say, and it's happened before, where you say we have to test the market, where we test the advertising to see if it works, then I'm going to test the market. And the second thing that I got from it is that I have to do rule one, which is to do what you're going to say to do. Basically, everything that you've told me to do to date has worked in one way or the other, whether it's a home run or whether it's not 5 to 10. And what was amazing is from that drill that we did, and I keep going back to that marketing boot camp because it was amazing to work with all those different styles and them having to come up with marketing plans for different school types. But what we came up with was amazing because I didn't think that I would be able to stretch out as far financially when I went into marketing for the school. And just like you had said, if your price point or what you're charging is high enough, then you're going to go ahead and be able to go ahead and cover whatever marketing costs that you have. I was able to cover the marketing costs, which was for the Rock and Roll Half Marathon. It's a booth there that they have. There's supposed to be like 10,000 people coming through. And, out of that group, we had about 200 people sign up on our list. And then out of that group, only about 100 were from the Virginia Beach area. However, out of that group, I just needed two to go ahead and justify the marketing. And we've already had that. We've already had that, and it's already covered the expense. There was another idea that was out there that was the going to the open houses. Oh, my goodness. I didn't even show up to the open house. I had volunteers go. We've got another 100 names right there. So everything that you've said, everything that we've worked through that were plans, they were all solid plans. And I really appreciate that because it's things that work.
I appreciate the compliment. I think the thing that maybe is perhaps for clarification on that is that, so many times the answer for the guys who are failing is they say, oh, that's great for Virginia Beach, but that wouldn't work in Wichita. Or that's great for Denver, but that would never work in New York City. Or that's great for kids, it would never work with adult men. And as you've now seen, that's just an excuse for failure. It's not reality. And
absolutely.
As we're working one-on-one and as we're working with a group, there certainly are things we say, this particular newspaper or this particular media or this particular thing we've got to go check it out because we don't know what the readership is going to be or what the results are going to be until we try it. But same concepts that are working just fine in Virginia Beach are also working in Bahrain and working in Frankfurt, Germany. Oliver Drexler, who was just there, is an example, and working in South Africa, you know, all over the world, the same concepts. And frankly, mostly the same advertising layout and price points.
Yes, sir.
So, Jeff, from a standpoint of really keeping a high level of engagement, you had transitional trauma with staff. And give everybody some thoughts on how to really get the staff engaged and the team engaged and have a high level of energy and enthusiasm, especially during perhaps some trauma with everybody.
One of the things that one of the concepts that you put across and that you kind of taught in a backwards way, but it kind of hit me afterwards, is how to come up with plans and make the plans the idea of the staff. And I'd seen this done before, but it had never been done to me. And when we did that during one of the conferences, basically we were asked to do a project together and come up with it. And when you did that, we had to put our brains together and work on it and come up with a plan. And what was interesting about it is instead of you giving us the plan, we became invested in the plan and had to make it work. And we used the resources that were around us in order to come up with a plan, and it became our own plan. Now, you did guide us by telling us what would work and what kind of wouldn't work and what have you, but it still was our plan in the end analysis. And what I've started doing here, and it's worked immensely well, is to do the same exact thing. Whenever we have a project coming up, we have an event coming up, whether it be Buddy Week or some type of other project that we want done and completed in a certain amount of time, instead of me just dictating it to them, I say, well, this is the goal. You know, what is your input, and then when can we get it done? And then we all brainstorm for a little bit, and we come up with a plan. And because they're invested in it, because it's their idea at that point, they want to see it succeed. And so they put more energy into it, just like we did during one of those conferences.
Yeah, and the multi-school application of that is that, you know, I was always fine when I was running 6 locations or 5 locations is I really didn't care how they got there. I cared that they had enough enrollments and high enough revenue per student and good retention. And it would be we always had a list of 20 things, and if they did any 5 or 10 of them, they would have enough enrollments. And it was kind of letting people in different locations pick and choose what they were going to emphasize. Obviously, there were some things that were important for everybody to be focusing on in any given period because of seasonality or because we're buying media. But the more you can do that, just as you said very elegantly, is the more they're now invested in the outcome, and it's not you're trying to convince them to follow your plan, you're supporting them, coaching them, and teaching them to follow their own plan.
Right, that's absolutely correct. And that was one of my biggest downfalls is I knew kind of what needed to get done, and so I would kind of just dictate to everybody what needed to get done. And just that small turn where I'm now letting them come up with the idea, letting them decide some of the things that need to get done, it has made a dramatic difference as far as morale and as far as, you know, them being vested in doing the work. The other thing that comes to mind that we made a change in that I kind of didn't understand before, and I know that this is another basic concept that a lot of people have done that I just never did because I come from a Taekwondo / Hapkido background, was the rotating curriculum. Mm-hmm. It was explained to me, I think the rotating curriculum was explained to me maybe 2 years ago. And I'd seen it on a DVD, and then somebody explained it to me, and I didn't understand it. And then finally somebody at the first conference I went to up in West Point, I was eating lunch with them, And he just showed me with sugar packets how it works. And it was completely clear at that point. That's from one conversation from another owner that was already implementing the solution. But what that's done, and after talking to him and talking to Jeff Smith, Master Smith, about the cycles, the testing cycles, and the rotating curriculum, we've been able to go ahead and nip in the bud one of the problems that we've been having with retention, which is at a higher level, it takes longer for us for one of the students to graduate. We just added another belt in, and we're able to accomplish the same goal, which was to get students to learn a certain amount of material, but learn it even better when it's split up into two-month sections into one instead of 1 4-month section. And it was just incredible when we started implementing this. All the parents are happy. You would not believe how much better service we are giving our students because everybody's kind of on the same page with the same drills, and it looks so sharp on the mat because everybody's doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's a huge difference, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Absolutely is.
I tell the story on Jeff Smith, but you know he's been running a school for professional chain of schools probably 10 years longer than I have, but I've been doing it for a long time. But it took me forever to convince him. But you know now once he finally did it, and it's been a few years now. But he freely admits one, he was hard headed, and two, he would never go back. And I know at the last event. There were four or five owners. I think Dave Moss and Oliver Drexler were two of them. That the light finally went off on what we were talking about, and I've talked to them since, and they would never go back either. So it's just a dramatic shift, mostly a dramatic shift in quality and service delivery.
Absolutely, absolutely. It is definitely the something that will improve the retention of the students. Because they understand the material better within that time frame, and they're going to get better at the techniques because everybody's going over the same drills and everybody can model off of each other, and they model much, much better if they're seeing the same technique than instead of three different techniques in the same class. So that is definitely one of the things that came out of that. It's just been. I hate to keep repeating myself, but it's been such a blessing to be able to network with such high-level owners because it's expanded my thinking as far as what needs to get done and what can be accomplished with even one location.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and we have an interesting split between big multi-school operators and big single-school operators. So, you know, million-dollar single schools and multi-million-dollar multi-schools. So there's both ends of the spectrum. And, of course, there are different issues and different challenges at both sides of it. Let's go back to now student service and student quality. As you've developed your school over the years, and, again, a lot of people think that as you professionalize and commercialize and get the gross up, somehow you're compromising on quality. What's your analysis of that? How do you feel that your quality and student retention and graduation rate to Black Belt, how has that been affected over the last 2 years?
Well, as you professionalize what you're doing, it just means that you're putting things in an order that people can understand, can be tracked, and can be improved upon. What's happened over the years as we've systematized the curriculum, and as we've taught the curriculum in a way that the students can understand it, and as we implemented this rotating curriculum, we find that the retention now has increased. We find that the quality of the student actually increases. Then years past, when I had 3-4 belts in a class, and I'm trying to teach 4 or 5 different techniques, and there's not any general order to anything. Than trying to throw all the material into one pot. One of the things that's really interesting is that I'm also studying Wing Chun Kung Fu at this point, studying under just the Sifu that I know. What's interesting is that the school that he's running, and I'm allowing him to have, well, I'm giving some space for him to run this school here at my school, as I'm taking Wing Chun, but there is no order to what they're teaching. I'm having a blast in the class because I'm learning something different than what I'm teaching, but there's no order to how they're teaching it. And maybe I don't see the big picture. I understand that there's a couple forms and if there's basics and you train those basics. But as far as being a professional school, they're definitely not that. And because they're not a professional school, they have 10 students maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that I've said to them, it kind of falls on deaf ears. And I'm okay because I'm just help them out and that's not a big deal. But they're going to keep staying at that size unless they decide to, as you said, professionalize themselves to get better attention and better students.
Yeah, and you know, I've had the conversation so many times with, including my instructor from Tulsa, who still runs in a YMCA, and again, what I've always seen is the direct correlation is the more professional the school and the better they are as an educator, the higher quality students they have, the higher graduation to black belt, higher percentage of the students are ever going to truly get excellent. And in part it's because, you know, in your case, Jeff, you're spending more time training on learning how to be a better educator and a better school operator than a part-timer is spending doing anything related to martial arts.
Yes, sir.
So, if you're going to give, let's say that one of the school owners listening is having a little bit of a hard time getting enough new students in the door, and they wanted to go out and immediately have an impact this month, what are four or five things that you've had some good success with in the last few months that they could immediately go do?
Okay, if they're a type of business like as mine, which is a children-based business, and we have an adult population as well, but it's a smaller percentage. We're about 70% kids and about 30% adults. The first thing that they can do is they can get involved with the Partners in Education or School Talks, and they can definitely get involved with their local college. They can do those two things. The other thing that they can do is definitely start putting out their material, and what I mean by putting out their material, I mean by being out there with the rack cards, being out there with the lawn signs or the bandit signs, as we called them, so everybody knows that you're there. And those are just a couple of things that you could do to immediately start getting calls.
Yeah, let's talk about the school talks thing for a second, and it's kind of one of my pet peeves because to the best of my knowledge, that got started in the industry back in the early 80s, and I always called it gym teacher for the day. And
yes, sir.
When it got repackaged as school talks and then sold as a package, is the key ingredient of the whole thing out, which was the concept of and the permission slip is so that you get name, address, phone number, email address. We all know that I can go out and do a demo for 50 kids and pass out flyers. I'm lucky to get one phone call. But if I go first, if I go teach a class as opposed to do something that's entertaining, my results improve by probably 500 to 1,000%. And then
yes,
number
sir,
two, if I get their name, address, phone number, email address, and can follow up proactively, my results go up another 1,000%. So it's a huge difference. Talk about that, because you've seen that recently. I know you and I were talking before we started the conversation or the recording about some of those programs. But what have you had some success with there?
Yes, sir. I'm a partner in education with currently five different schools here with the elementary school system. And we do something called Defeat the Bully Without Fighting. And basically I go into the school and, like you said, I take over the gym class and I go over the Virginia Beach public schools, code of conduct, and we give them five different things so so they don't get in trouble, you know, how to defeat the bully. So we give them five different areas that they can do before they get in trouble, or so they don't get in trouble. In years past, I would do these things and then get little or no result, maybe one call and maybe just name recognition, and that was it. What we did different this year is I had actually tried to do a permission slip. It was denied at one of the schools, and that was okay. But I did a different tact, which is to send out a letter directly after the seminar. And the letter basically stated, you know, please go over the code of conduct that involves fighting and bullying, and then also go over the five action steps that you're supposed to take. And at the very bottom of it, it was very simple. It just said, yes, please contact me regarding the program. Yes, please contact me, but my child is currently involved in another program. And the last one was, no, I'm not interested at this point. And just out of that, we had 20 leads right away that came in saying, want more information on the program. So those are 20 solid leads that we got just from that. So I'm expecting the same thing from every other elementary school that I'm going to right now.
You bet. And what we found, I mean, we used to do a lot of the media telemarketing behind this stuff, but if you take everybody whose information you capture, direct mail to them and email to them, you know, they rarely have anybody complain. And anybody who raises their hand and says, I immediately want information, you want to call them right away. But as we talked about at the boot camp, and it's an ongoing theme, is almost nobody follows up with a warm prospect enough. And just because we show up at the elementary school in September or in February doesn't mean that's the right time for them to enroll. We've got to go back over and over and over by direct mail and by email and by broadcast voicemail and text message and live person calling them to ever have the kind of results that are possible.
Yes, sir. That's absolutely correct. I was absolutely amazed when when I looked at your follow-up system and the follow-up system that we had in place that was very anemic. Our follow-up system was just, you know, just callbacks, and then they would go into the newsletter as a follow-up. But from just what you mentioned, you hit those people up, I want to say at least 20 times, at least 20 times during the month, which is so many times more, I guess 200%, 400% more than what I'm doing. And so it's telling me what I need to do in order to grow to the level that I want to grow to.
Well, and just because I ignore you or say no today doesn't mean I'm not really interested eventually. It just may be the wrong timing. And so we lose sight of that and just stop following up with them. And then sooner or later they end up doing something else where they probably would have come into our school. But, hey, we're going to run out of time here pretty quickly, but it has been really, really valuable. You had a unique perspective. We took the entire group to West Point, and I guess I should say United States Military Academy at West Point. And really the point was to focus on leadership development at the highest level and the things that we can bring back into the school. Your unique perspective was you're a graduate of Annapolis. United States
Yes,
Naval
sir.
Academy in Annapolis. Give them some lessons that not only from your experience at Annapolis, but our meeting at West Point that directly is applicable to all the school owners.
Excellent. Some of the lessons that I learned at Annapolis were to get the job done no matter what. And that was another theme that I saw at West Point, is to get the job done. And in order to get the job done, you need the right tools. And the right tools are right in front of you. And if you can use them in the correct manner, at the right time, then you can be successful. And the interesting thing is that the tools were there in front of me all the time in order to be super successful. I just didn't have the knowledge as far as applying them. And to have that mentorship of somebody that has been through it and that understands how to make it work is absolutely invaluable. And there's the same thing that gets set up at the academies. You have the plebe year that you go in and you don't have anything, and they recondition you that first year. They completely recondition how you and how you do things and how your time management is. And you have it, but the way you learn it is by mentorship. You have people that are above you that are training you to do this. And so one of the big takeaways from whether it be West Point or whether it be the U.S. Naval Academy is that you always have to have a teacher, somebody that's going to be a mentor to you, somebody that you can look up to, and somebody that you can follow into the fire because they've been there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's one of the things I'm proud of is we've spent a lot of time really modeling the top organizations in the world, whether it be the U.S. Service Academies, which Forbes magazine, I think it was, recently did a top 10 schools for producing business leaders in the country, and West Point, Annapolis, and Air Force Academy were all three in the top 10. I mean, right up beside Harvard, Stanford, and Yale and Princeton. And obviously we're modeling Disney and Harvard Business School, for that matter. The for somebody out there who's been kind of hearing us drop hints about peak performers in a circle, but have been skeptical or just not sure if it's for them, what would be the 2 points of advice you would give them?
The thing that I would tell them is to just try it. And the reason I say just try it is when we did this and we had started with it was peak performers at the time. Just being in that environment allowed us a chance to expand our thinking as far as where the school could grow and the rate of growth that it could grow. And this is something that you mentioned the last time that we talked is that schools can grow either linearly or exponentially. And I did not understand that until I actually talked to Master Smith. When he gave me a concept, I was completely blown away. And it's something that you guys already teach, where if you have 80% of your revenue coming from renewals or upgrades, then you're going to be growing exponentially. And then it didn't dawn on me, it didn't hit me until he explained it to me. But just that one concept right there is you don't have to grow linearly anymore. You can grow exponentially, and that can happen within 3 to 6 months.
Yeah. It's a heck of a lot easier. I mean, at one point you can be doing $30,000 a month now, and then you grow 3% this year and 5% next year. And maybe it's just my personality, but that to me is a sure route to burnout. But if you go from $30,000 to $60,000 to $90,000, that's pretty exciting.
Yes, it is. It's very exciting.
And it's doable. And you mentioned Jeff Smith, but at this, not terribly far from you, but there by Dulles Airport, we use that as a training center for the Mile High Karate Schools. But the number there, as we were talking about before, is 87% of everybody who enrolls ends up renewed or upgraded, and close to 90% of the people who end up upgrade into the more expensive program. And I mean, our tuition points now are $247 a month for new enrollment, and I think it's two. I don't do many of these anymore, but $297 a month for the lowest level upgrade, and $497 for the leadership program.
Yes, sir.
And what confuses people is the vast majority of the ones that are renewing into the more expensive thing, not the less expensive.
That's absolutely correct. And that was one of the things that was taught to us, is that as somebody is committing to you more, we will extend more service to you, which would be the leadership programs. But we're going to be doing this as a college, as if it was a college environment, where you're going to be going through the paces and you're going to be learning everything there is to learn about leadership. And because we're doing that for you, we're going to charge you a higher price point. And that's okay, because we're giving you more service. And that was an incredible, incredible, incredible concept. And it did. It took me a long time to wrap my head around that, because I would, as somebody would enroll for a longer amount of time, I would actually give them a discount because they're enrolling for a longer amount of time. So they have more commitment towards me, and so I would give them a better discount. But from what you've been saying the whole time, and from what's been shown to us, we can actually give them more as far as service is concerned and as far as quality is concerned. And then it makes sense as to why we're doing it, because it's character development along with just physical training. And it's something that we promised from the beginning.
Well, absolutely. And I'll tell you, one other thing is people are already used to thinking that way in terms of education. You know, my kids go to private school, and private preschool is less expensive than private elementary school, which is less expensive than private middle school, which is much less expensive than Harvard. And so, they're used to, as the value of the instruction goes up, for there to be a higher price point. And now we're talking about not only the same basic curriculum at a higher level, but we're talking about a much expanded curriculum as well. So it's not like that once you explain, they're not used to thinking. Hey, we've got a little over our time here, and it's been extremely valuable, hopefully, for everybody listening to the call. I really appreciate how open and sharing you've been. And let me get the commitment for us to do a little follow-up, because we've, as you know, barely scratched the surface. There's so much to go through. But just give my best wishes to everybody there in Virginia Beach. And I appreciate your beautiful ocean view. And I've got a little bit of a mountain view here from my office. And we'll wrap up for the day. Any last couple words of wisdom for everybody before we ring off?
I guess the last thing that I have to say is do what you say. I hate to say that again, but if I would have just done it from the beginning and just hit the I believe button, just like I tell everybody else here, I'd be so much farther ahead than where I'm at right now.
So we should just get on like those Staples it's easy buttons and make it.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes,
I'm not sure if we send it out, it would have the same impact or not, but I certainly appreciate the kudos and to you too. I'm so impressed with your progress and excited to have you as part of the team. So
thank you,
we'll ring off since we're out of time, and then talk soon.
Excellent.